Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. I'm a food service design consultant and I'm also a chef by trade. This podcast, we delve into the heart of food service equipment and hospitality. Now today, we're in the Midlands at the CEDA conference and I'm sitting down with two leaders from our industry, one from the UK and one from the US. I'm also sitting down with young professionals from the US and the CEDA Academy from the UK. Now, my first guest is Kirsten Hatherley. She's the Managing Director of Hatherley Commercial Services and the Chair of CEDA. With decades of experience in food service equipment and service, Kirsten brings a grounded perspective to the voice and industry, balancing the practical challenges of running a service-led business and strategic leadership of one of the UK's most important trade associations. Kirsten, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
No at all. How's the CEDA conference been? Obviously, we're here at the CEDA conference. How's it been? I've only just started, but how's it been so far?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been nice to open up. We did a little piece outside to welcome everyone. And I think we've started now with the one-to-ones and everyone's milling around and getting to see people. So, yeah, good start.
It looks quite busy. And I saw you walking up the corridor and everyone stops you every second person. So you're in demand.
Nice to be famous.
So tell us a bit about your kind of journey into the food service equipment sector. And then obviously what led to you founding your business. And then we'll get on to CEDA. But yeah.
Yeah. So my family, my dad has been in this sort of industry for many years. In fact, he set up his own business in 69 as an electrical contractor, which then went into into catering equipment, first of all domestic, and then they went to commercial catering equipment. So, you know, it's a family thing. It's not something that we weren't doing already. Ben, my brother, and my dad set up Hatherley Commercial Services in 2002.
Okay.
And I was happily at the time working abroad.
Oh, right,
so I was having a fun time abroad in the tourist industry. So, you know, not even in hospitality. So my dad came to see me and sort of said, you know, your brother should have somebody he can trust. I'd like to retire. So, yes, eventually I agreed to come and join the family business. And that's how it started.
And
that was in... Yeah, so
overseas travels.
Instead of driving around the Mediterranean and in the sunshine, I ended up in lovely old Newark again, and it took a bit of time to getting used to to that and the industry. And so the company had been running then for 3 years.
Okay,
but I'm not one of those people to sit and sort of not do anything about it. You know, I like to get my teeth into things and get to know what there is to know and analyze things and Within a couple of years, we'd joined CEDA and, you know, we were growing the business, and me and Ben have taken it from there sort of ever since.
Okay. And what is it? Is it predominantly service that you're doing? Is that the core of the business? Or?
Yeah. So I would say probably 60% of our revenue comes from service and maintenance.
Okay.
We've got a team of 10 engineers. So, we've got mostly East Midlands contracts with... county councils, a lot of schools catering, which is great work to have because they don't work weekends, so that's really nice. But we do hospitals, care homes, restaurants, you name it, anything with a commercial kitchen.
Okay.
But aside from the domestic, from the maintenance side, we do small projects.
Okay.
So Ben, my brother, deals with the projects and the sales.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of one-off sales, of course, from
asset replacement
that is, beyond repair.
Yeah. Mm.
So we get a lot of one-off sales through that. And then, small projects. Again, it's a lot of schools catering, packouts. Lincolnshire, they sort of tend to create school meals within a single building and then ship them out to their primary schools.
Yeah.
So we did quite a big CPU last year over in Boston. So, the company, we do pretty much everything, and we'll do flooring, we'll do ceilings, we'll do absolutely anything, within a small project.
It's a complete fit out, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you seen a kind of shift in the sector, in the service and maintenance sector, in the last few years or even the last decade, or is it the same as what was?
I think fundamentally, the sort of the groundworks of maintenance is pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the biggest things that we've certainly brought on board in the last 10 years would be service software.
Okay.
That's made a huge difference to the way you work and how responsive you can be with your paperwork. You know, sort of 10 years ago, before we took on service software, we were waiting for an engineer to come back with a piece of paper.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And, you know, if it needed a quote, for the engineer to come back with those
pieces of paper, yeah,
figures on it, you know, and now obviously we can turn that around within minutes.
Because you're getting live updates.
Because we're getting live updates. Customers have got the updates and the paperwork within minutes of the engineer finishing. So
does that enable you to also track where the engineer is and what?
Yes. So it's
they probably
it's
hate
great.
That, but it's great for you. You know where they're coming.
Gone
next
are
job.
The days when they can sneak off to the pub and say they're still at work. But yeah, I mean, it is great to know the location of your engineers, because if you've got a call coming in, you know it's urgent. Have a look on the map. Yep, I've got a guy 2 hours away or 2 miles away. It's really,
so you can allocate the resources better and manage.
Yeah. And that, you know, I think it was exactly 10 years ago we started using service software, and you know, that's changed things dramatically for most companies, I should say, out there.
Yeah.
I should say probably the other thing that's changed quite dramatically is spare supplier. So they've sort of become, there's not a lot of competition out there now for buying spares, and you know, that in some ways it isn't as good, because you know you're not getting the sort of the competition
of course
through buying spares and things like that. So you know, that's got a bit more tough, and it would be nice to have a bit more competition on the market there, and also warranty issues as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're a service company and we sell equipment, we've sort of shifted towards wanting to sell equipment that we can look after the warranty.
Yeah.
Because then if something goes wrong, engineer could be on site or going to be there during the week. At some point we can say, you know, we look after the warranty, we can send an engineer. Whereas relying on a manufacturer, you don't know when they're going.
Could
they
be
don't
days.
Keep you up to date.
Days
or day. You've got to sort of contact one of their service agents. Mm. I think sometimes that's not a great service.
Yeah.
So it's good if as a company like ourselves, we can look after the warranty. Yeah.
And from a customer's perspective, if you've sold that piece of kit, they kind of almost blame you for that. But even though it's not your fault, really.
Absolutely.
Possibly,
I mean, they're not going to say, oh, it's a manufacturer. I'm going to ring the manufacturer.
Yeah.
They're going to call us. Yeah. And if we can't get that bit of kit up and running as quickly as possible, they're going to blame us. And when it's out of your hands, and you don't know when the manufacturers go in, they don't keep you up to date. Very difficult, because
it's frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're the chair of CEDA today. you're coming to the end of your tenure. Is it 2 years?
It's actually 3.5.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay, so you've done the...
So we usually
normal?
Do 2.
Right, okay.
That's the traditional sort of length of tenure. But when I became chair, we were just out of COVID.
Yeah,
2021. Okay. There was... Obviously, everyone was really busy trying to sort of reinvent themselves and catch up post-COVID. So when I took the role... nobody wanted to be vice chair, because everyone sort of said, I just can't, I'm so busy.
Yeah, because obviously it's quite a commitment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we ran with it. It was fine. And then sort of a year and a half in, we finally, you know, had a vice chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of said to Paul, do you want to do 2 years as vice? He sort of said, yes, please. So we ran with it in that way. And I didn't mind doing 3.5 years, because I've really enjoyed it.
I mean, what is the role, if for people that don't know, as chair of CEDA? What do you do, I suppose?
Well, we were just discussing this, actually, with my brother in the car on the way here. You are, I suppose, essentially the face of the association.
Yeah.
You represent the members.
Okay.
So, yes, you chair the meetings, which is your primary sort of job, I guess, and you know, some official decisions that need to be made.
Yeah,
I'm the representative of CEDA. You go out to other people's trade association conferences, you know, and events, which I've enjoyed joining them. It's been really good, and I've met some really lovely people as well along the way. So I will be quite sad that I shan't be going to these events anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's. There's a lot of good people, that work four-seater, and they do a lot of the hard work.
Yeah.
So, you know, as chair, you know, you just sort of turn up and be the face of the members.
Yeah. It seems the biggest organisation within our sector. Is that fair to say, membership-wise? Or
yes, so we are currently at 153 members.
Yeah.
I suppose when you say within the sector, it's how far you want to take it out.
Yeah,
You know, we've got FEA, which represent the manufacturers and suppliers. We represent more the distributors, the designers, service companies such as myself. So, you know, and there are crossing lines between the two associations. Then you've sort of got consultants again. We do have things in common. I would say I'm not sure how many members the FEA has at the moment, so I couldn't really say.
It just
say,
feels, but, as out there, it felt there's a lot of people there.
Yeah, well, we've got, this is our biggest conference to date, so we've got over 300 people attending this over the next 2 days. So, you know, it's good. It's well attended and by people across, you know, those three associations as well, because we're all sort of what FEA members are partners to. Many of them are partners to CEDA. So,
of course. Yeah. So, I mean, later in the podcast, I'm going to be talking to the CEDA Academy and obviously to the young professionals from CFESA. What do you think CEDA is meeting and is evolving to help bring young people into our sector?
Yeah, hugely. I think over, you know, since the creation of the Academy, we've done a massive of things for the young people within the industry. I was just talking with some of the members of the CEDA Academy outside earlier, and they couldn't express enough how much it's helped them within their confidence and in their careers to have been part of the CEDA Academy. And coming to an event like this, I think we've got 30 members of the Academy coming to the conference.
Okay.
And they, you know, and it's their time to sort of, you know, they can mingle and talk to people. I mean, these events used to just be the MD. It would always, you know, be sort of restricted, not necessarily restricted to it, but that was just traditionally how it was. And since the creation of the CEDA Academy, we invite them to conference. We want to get them involved.
Yeah.
They bring a sort of an air of excited, you know, it's good. Yes, it's good to see them here, you know, and you can hear them and they're really sort of lively and it brings a really nice aspect and dynamic to the conference to have them involved.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, I think certainly the Academy, you've got the e-learning platform as well, where we've got over 200 modules of learning on there. So that's open to all members, of course, but, you know, for people coming into the industry and learning, it's all there and it's all part of the membership. So that's a really good tool.
Yeah.
And the CEDA 4 app that was launched as well last year, which has all the technical documents on it for the engineers.
Okay.
So they've got an app straight there, a lot of technical documents on there, which, you know, are readily available for hopefully saving people a lot of time out on the field.
Out on the field. Mm. All good initiatives, really. I mean, you're one of the few females, if you don't mind me saying, obviously, leading a service business. I know you. It's 60% service, 40% install. And obviously the outgoing, if you like, chair of a national association. I know Emma Brooks is chair of the FEA. How do you view, not to get too political, but how do you view sort of the gender, male-female thing and the representation in our sector today compared to, say, even a decade or even pre-COVID?
Yeah, it's certainly getting better. You can look around the room now and say probably the number of females within a room at something like this has probably tripled.
Yeah.
I remember being at CEDA conference, you know, sort of back 10 years ago and being able to count how many females there were on one hand.
Yeah.
You know, it is traditionally a male-dominated
sector.
In that, you know, you're going to get chefs, which is again quite male dominated. They're going to probably filter down into becoming sales reps.
Mm-hmm.
You've got engineers, of course, which are mostly male again, who may move into different areas of the sector. So I think it's never going to be 50-50.
Yeah.
Okay. Because of those elements and it being sort of more of a male naturally a male environment. But that doesn't, so you know, it doesn't stop women from coming into other roles, you know, that are more fitting, if you like. So, you know, it's definitely changing, and it's definitely getting better. And if you look at, you know, most of the associations currently are all female chairs.
I started off
a trend, obviously. So, you know, that's good, and it's better. It's, you know, but I think at the end of the day, for me, is just to sort of, it's the right person for the right job.
Of course, no matter what
or who they are. Yeah. And, you know, it's that's what you've got to think of, and nobody wants to be employed into a position because, you know, of being a female, or it's because you're the right person.
But I think it's fair to say that, you know, females in any leadership role will bring a different perspective, a different take, maybe a slightly different direction.
A different dynamic, probably.
The way we shake things up a little
things differently and approach things in a different way, perhaps. Yeah. I think it's good for every business to have a good broad section of people.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. Just sort of take a step back, if you like, into a slightly different subject. But what advice would you give to someone who's sort of joining the industry? I guess linking in data, they could be male or female, but I mean, it doesn't really matter. But what advice might you give to someone who's thinking about it, always joining?
Yeah, I mean, I've always said it's a bit of an odd industry, isn't it? You know, you don't leave college and say, I'm going to be a catering engineer or a commercial kitchen designer. It's just not really something on the radar.
So that's a good point.
The industry tends to be one that you either fall into, or it's the family links, which many of our CEDA members are family companies. So, you know, it's an odd industry. Mm-hmm. But when you do decide you want to join it, I think it's getting in, networking, finding those opportunities like today and tomorrow and in trade shows, things like that, to network with people and sort of find out what the industry is about and learn from these people. You know, there's a lot of people that have been in the industry for so many years, and they're great people to learn from. You know, and I think then it's just putting in the hard work and commitment and the dedication, and then obviously that brings rewards, and you can get anywhere, do anything you want, but you've got to put the hard work in. And be yourself, I think, is one of the things that came from, you know, some of the guys in the academy earlier, talking to them, is that don't be afraid to be yourself. You know, this is young, new dynamics that we want people to be themselves. We want that freshness in the industry.
And to relax and just be who they are.
We don't want to be, you know, new rules and new faces and fresh ideas.
Which is
what positive. It's all about, isn't it?
It's a positive message, isn't it, really? And a good thing. Just thinking about kind of like trends, is there any trends that advice, I suppose, that you might give to people, distributors, consultants, manufacturers, when it comes to either servicing equipment or purchasing equipment?
Well, the service side of things, again, I sort of asked some engineers this question, see what they would come up with.
And you have a team of them, so unfair advantage.
One of the biggest things that most of them said was ease of access to the equipment. You know, you might have a panel with 200 screws in it, or, you know, that is obviously exaggerating a little bit. You know, it's ease of access, or having to turn the machine upside down, or the components are so tight you can't get into it. So that's one of the things, is just thinking about when you're designing a piece of kit, is to think about how is this going to be repaired? How is it going to be serviced?
You know,
is it easy to, or are we going to spend 3 hours on screws before we can even get in there? And I think post sales, you know, with regards to servicing and repairing, is having that information, that installation manual available, that service manual available. Some manuals we see have obviously been Google translated from German or Italian or somewhere wherever it's been made, and really don't make any sense. And also, you know, the technical support. Some manufacturers do it really, really well. Mm-hmm. And we get an amazing after service, and the engineers can call, mm-hmm. or they've got WhatsApp groups, and we get some really, really good service.
Okay.
Other manufacturers do it really, really badly.
Okay.
And it's probably because they've got their own team of engineers and don't want to give the information away.
Yeah, yeah.
But my problem is, if you want us to sell it, you've got to help us maintain it.
Yeah, provide that backup.
So that for me is a big, still remains a big issue. And that and training as well for engineers. You've got to give that information out. Otherwise, why sell it?
No, definitely. I totally agree. I think there's too many, or not too many, but there is some manufacturers holding on to things for whatever reason. Mm. But just last couple of questions, if you don't mind. That if you weren't running your business, what might you do? It's difficult question.
I've poured many an hour thinking about this. Is what would I do? I think just run overseas and sit by the Mediterranean, hopefully with enough money in my pocket. But in reality, it's hard to say when you've been in a business for, it's be 20 years this year.
That
you kind of don't get time to think about what else you would like to do. In my history, I've done a lot in theatre, I always wanted to be an actor.
Okay.
So I guess I'd go and try and see if do an audition for EastEnders or something and try my luck. But I would love to do something like that.
And just a final question to wrap up, what's your sort of proudest moment as chair of CEDA?
Being chair, I suppose, is one of the, becoming chair of CEDA is something that I'm so immensely proud of. And I'd never, ever, if you'd said 10 years ago, I'd be like, no, get out of here. There's no chance that I'll ever be chair of CEDA. So being chair of CEDA has just been, I've had to pinch myself up through, the last three and a half years ago.
We've come quite a long way in 3.5 years, actually. Yeah. So you really were a trailblazer becoming a female.
Yeah, first female of a 50-year-old association. So, it's been really wonderful and I've really enjoyed it. And that's got to be one of my biggest achievements in life. And the other things would be winning the odd award. And, the FEA gave me an achievement award and joined, some wonderful events over the last 3.5 years, which I've really enjoyed doing. Of course, I went to Savannah, Georgia, to the CEFESA conference. So that was really good.
Yeah.
That was really lovely people. Really, really nice.
So did you go on now to become past chair on the board?
Yes.
You're going to stay on the board.
Immediate past chair. You stay on for, 2 years. If anything happens to the current chair for any reason, you're there to come back in if you need to. And I will stay on the board. So I'll still be very much involved.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you so much for giving. I know you're really busy today. So, Kirsten, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast.
I have. Thank you. Thanks for having me. And
no problem. Well, enjoy the rest of the conference and I'll see you about. So thank you.
I will do. Thank you.
Thanks. Joining us now from the United States is Steve Slyter, the owner of CPS, Commercial Parts and Service Company in the US. And he's also the current president of CEFESA, Commercial Food Equipment Service Association. Stephen brings international perspective on service operations, workforce development, and he's also got an eye on the future as he's the newly elected president of CEFESA. And he's joining me now on the show. Steve, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
No, thank you. I mean, you've come all the way from the US on Sunday, I believe.
That's right.
Right, okay. Jet lag or?
A little bit there at the beginning, but I'm getting used to it now.
Okay.
I'm doing okay.
So what's your week been like so far? Because we're Wednesday today. What's your week been?
Yeah, it's been a bit busy. We've set up quite a few tours. Mechline.
Okay.
Barmaid. WV Howe was yesterday.
So quite a few different stops and
they're
making the most of your time while you're here.
That's right. It's been a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah, like speed dating, but for catering equipment.
Exactly.
So Steve, tell us a bit about your background, the company that that you own and run, and also your role as president within CFESA?
Sure. Our company, Commercial Parts and Service, was founded in 1972 by my grandfather, so I'm third generation. He started out as a technician for Hobart, so that's how we kind of got our start. Mm-hmm. So I took over in 2007, so I've been doing this for quite a long time now as president of my company.
Okay.
Got involved with CFESA. I've been on the board now for 10 or 12 years.
Right, okay.
I got elected by the president in October of this past year, so I'm fairly new.
Quite new into it. How long is your term?
It's a two-year term.
Two-year term, okay. Yeah. Are you enjoying it so far?
Yeah, I have been, yeah. Yeah.
I imagine it's quite busy because you're also running your company and then also having to do your public role.
Yeah, it's quite busy. So a lot of time management issues. But it's been great. The biggest thing right now is just trying to be the best ambassador I can for CFESA.
Yeah.
So back in the States, we've kind of seen some of the differences here as far as you can sell equipment, you can service equipment, like everything's kind of all packaged into one company here. Where back in the States, it's various channels. So we've got dealers and reps and manufacturers and consultants and service groups are the fifth channel. So being a good ambassador is meaning going to all these different associations for all these different channels, meeting all the other presidents and chairs of all these other associations.
So CFESA focuses on service and parts, is that right?
That's correct.
Not really distributors.
Correct.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so we're mainly all service agents.
Service agents, okay.
Yeah.
So kind of different there.
Yes.
Whereas here in the UK. Do the service agent sell equipment or not? Not really? Bits and pieces?
Not so much. Typically, if they do sell equipment, it's a very, you're swapping a light piece for another light piece.
Yeah.
So we don't really get into the design or, the installation and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so just like maybe like asset replacement.
Correct.
One-off items.
Right.
And
right.
So just talking about kind of CFESA, what do you do? I mean, it's trade association. Do you represent your members? I mean, yeah, tell me a little bit about what...
Yeah, we have about 500 members, and it's like I said, it's a service association.
Mm-hmm.
It's made up by service members. It was made for service members.
Okay.
I see. We've been around since 1960s.
Okay.
So it's been around quite a long time.
Yeah.
And our big initiative it's a 33 by 33 initiative, which is we're trying to get 33,000 training certificates by the year 2033.
Okay.
Training and education is a big part of what we do at CFESA. A lot of networking events. We have a national conference, which ours will be in October of this year in Arizona. So looking forward to that. But
a massive country, the US, so bringing all those people together.
That's right.
It's quite a big logistical challenge.
It is. So we have the one national conference in October, and then we also have five or six regional conferences, which make it a little easier for people to attend.
Okay. How many members within the association did you say, sorry?
About 500, I believe.
Oh, okay. So, quite large, really.
Yeah.
So your role as a president, obviously, I know you just said you've just been elected last year, so you're kind of, I don't know, 8 months or so into it, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What does it involve? How many days? Is it like a certain amount of days you do every month, or is it just it just depends? Or?
Yeah, so we have a board that consists of 12 members. So there's president, two vice presidents, treasury, secretary, and six directors. So there's 12 of us, plus our executive director, Heather Price. That makes 13. And we meet every month for a board call.
And online?
It's online. And we go over different various updates happening within the association, and we also have committee meetings. So we have committees for the young professionals, have a committee. What else do we have? We've got training and education committee. We've got a CFESA Cares committee, which does scholarships.
Okay.
And various different programs outside volunteer work and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who else we've got? Membership services. Yeah, that's the last one. Membership services.
Okay.
So So people coming in that are new to the association, we have ambassadors that kind of show them around, show them the ropes. And
yeah.
So
I mean, you're quite involved in promoting the next generation, the younger generation coming through,
yes,
and the young professionals. And actually later on today, I'm going to be speaking to a couple of your young professionals.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that without kind of stealing their thunder, but as the president, like, what's the vision of that? How did it come around?
Yeah, it's a very exciting group. I'm not saying I'm the founding member of it, but I was one of the first young professionals, I guess, that kind of went through the group. And at the time, there was a gentleman by the name of Bruce Hodge that would just kind of talk about what it's like growing up in the industry and kind of showing us the path.
Yeah.
To success sort of thing. But the group has really evolved, and it's really taken on just kind of, it's got its own mission and vision right now, and it's super exciting. And it's a great way to bring some of these younger people into the industry and show some excitement and that there's a really rewarding career in this industry.
Okay. How many,
it's very exciting.
How many people are in the young professionals?
About 40 or 50 or so now.
And do they apply, or do you ask them, or is it?
They sort of recruit on their own.
Okay.
So the group's just continually to evolve and grow.
So the group is looking for kind of further naturally. People to join. And
yeah, so anybody under 40 that they see at the conference, they grab them.
And try to recruit them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they've been very successful. It's very exciting.
And the vision is what, just to help move them through the industry and to attract new people to the industry?
It does help attract new people, but it's also kind of developing them to become future leaders within our industry.
Okay. And obviously you're proof of that. Now being the president.
I have gone through it. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's an inspiring story, really, for people to follow.
That's right. It's very exciting.
So just for me to understand, for the listeners, really, Cifessa, you're working, or you're aligned with CEDA, what is that relationship, and you know, how did it happen? And obviously you're here at the CEDA conference.
Yes, so you know, networking and collaborating is one of the most important things that we do, especially with our director Heather and I. So, you know, anything that we can do to put out a joint message to promote the food service industry.
Yeah.
We kind of all face the same kind of issues when it comes to recruiting and retaining technicians. So we saw a need there. Cifessa's, one of our main priorities is training and education.
Okay.
And there's something that, you know, that maybe we can offer some of the service groups over here.
Yeah.
If they're interested in specific service training for gas, steam, electric equipment, refrigeration equipment. But it's been great to partner with CEDA and see how they operate over here.
How long has
it's
that been great. Going on?
I think this is our second time.
Okay.
So, yeah. So relatively new.
Relatively new. Yeah, yeah. And I saw that there was, if I'm right in saying, a competition between the engineers. Is that right? Between the American engineers and the British engineers?
Yeah, and I think that was one of the things that was put forth from the young professionals.
Yeah.
That was an idea that they've had.
Yeah. Quite a good idea, quite fun, and get some working together.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I watched the video, so it was interesting to see.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, we touched on collaboration. How important do you think collaboration is?
I think it's super important. So I think we struggle with some of the same things, you know, both over here and back home.
Yeah.
When it comes to retaining and recruiting technicians, it's one of our, I think it's a global issue.
Yeah.
So if there's anything that we can do that, you know, anything we can do together to help kind of solve that issue,
definitely.
We definitely want to be a part of it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think these days collaboration, even sometimes between competitors, can be a positive thing. If we can learn and evolve and, we shouldn't shy away from it.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've noticed over here, being eco-friendly and sustainable and, you know, a lot of those kind of things tend to take a backseat, I feel like, back home.
Okay.
And it's something that seems to be a priority over here. So it's great to come over here and see some of those things that we can take back to our membership back home.
Okay.
And kind of just show them what we've learned over here, because I think it's very important.
Yeah, definitely. So just I've got a few more questions for you, but just to maybe come off the professional questions, maybe something a bit more fun. I think you do a bit of traveling, maybe, certainly in the US.
I do a lot, yes.
A lot of traveling, okay. What's your sort of go-to comfort food, be it, you know, at home or when you're traveling or even maybe both?
Thank you for asking. Let's see, over here, I love cheese.
Okay.
So it's great that I get a cheese board with every meal over here, so that's fun. Yeah. Back home, my wife and I, we do an anniversary at an Italian place, okay. So we love that. But steak and potatoes are really my go-to meal.
Right, okay.
For the most part. Yeah.
Yeah. When I'm traveling, I always end up, especially when I'm staying in Hilton, I always end up ordering a club sandwich. I don't know why, it's just like the... And then I can judge it by the club sandwich.
That's right.
Probably really bad, I think.
Very good.
What innovations are you seeing coming through from kind of your members and in the US?
Technology, of course, is always on the forefront. And there's a lot of new technology that's coming out. AI is becoming very important. Mm-hmm. Some of the new equipment that's coming out, the way that they're able to almost self-diagnose, and it sends a message back to the manufacturer, which then can send a message out to the service company. So we can try to get ahead of these service issues before it becomes a really big, big problem. The IoT, the Internet of Things, and the way that they're just tracking all of, you know, food waste, water reduction, you know, the way that they're tracking all these things. There's been some, you know, these augmented reality glasses.
Right.
So a technician can be on the field and looking at a piece of equipment, and you know, there'll be an engineer or a technician back at manufacturer's home base that can see the same thing, that can quickly help them diagnose things much quicker. So a lot of that stuff it's still new, but it's creeping, and it's going to be here before we know it.
So people, some of your members using that, where maybe there's a technician, and maybe there's like a master technician or something that can see if there's something really highly technical.
I'm not sure if it's in the field yet, but some of the past shows that I've been to, they've had it on display, so it's coming.
Yeah, that's really, that's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
I mean, we see that kind of with emergency services, they kind of have that already, where maybe, I don't know, there's a paramedic and then a very senior doctor or something, you know, so that they're able to communicate. But yeah, I think it's great because it will, I guess, improve first-time fix.
That's right. That's the goal.
Yeah.
To get this thing up and running as quickly as possible.
Yeah, which means satisfied customer.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of the technology is coming out, the way that it can self-diagnose itself and it can kind of tell us, you know, bring parts A, B, and C out to the job with you. So we have a much higher chance of getting that thing fixed the first time.
How do you see customers' reception to that? Because, I mean, I've seen that customers are sometimes reluctant to attach their equipment to the internet. I don't know if that.
There's been a lot of conversation about who owns the data.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So that's definitely a big topic. But at the end of the day, you know, less downtime will equal more profit for the customer. So we'll see how it goes.
See how it goes. Yeah. It's I guess with the right security and the right procedures, it's okay.
That's right.
Maybe this is a similar question, but just looking ahead to the next 5 years, or certainly at least the next 18 months of your presidency, what do you think is going to be the biggest shift? Is it going to be this move to technical, or, you know, and what are your hopes, if you like?
Yeah, I think the biggest move is going to be the AI and the technology that's in the new equipment that's coming out.
Okay.
I think it's going to make us better service companies because of it. So I'm excited to see it come out.
And I guess with this shortage of staff, it will help, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah. I think there's going to be a reduction in labor force.
Okay.
And I think that this technology will kind of help bridge some of that gap.
So. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we pretty much come to the end, but we're at the CEDA conference. I know you've only literally just arrived
right.
On your whirlwind tour. What are you hoping from today and tomorrow, or what's your aims, if you've got any aims, or with open mind?
Yeah, the things I'm hoping to look forward to the most is one, the sustainability and the eco-friendly equipment, and you know what changes are being made over here. I think personally that it's very important to me, so I'm excited to hear what's coming out about that. I'm also curious to hear how they're recruiting and retaining technicians.
Yeah.
Because we're facing the same problem back home.
Okay.
So if there's anything that we can do to collaborate and work together on, then
yeah,
I'm all for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining me on the podcast.
And, I appreciate it.
Enjoy the conference, and no doubt I'll see you around. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Welcome to the world of Ali, the largest and most diverse food service equipment company on the planet. With over 110 brands under the Ali Group umbrella, we serve more than 150 countries worldwide. Our brands are at the forefront of innovation, offering cutting-edge technology and ergonomic designs that keep pace with the ever-evolving market. But we're not just a global leader, we're a network of local companies working together to deliver excellence. Ali Group's unmatched expertise in food service makes us the proud exclusive sponsor of Kitchen Curiosity. To learn more, visit aligroup.com.
So this part of the podcast, I'm joined by four rising stars from both sides of the Atlantic. Two from CIFESA, from the Young Professionals Committee in the US, and also two from the CEDA Academy from here in the UK. Together, we're going to be exploring the associations, the developments, the young talent and collaboration that's happening across the two sectors. As I said, I'm joined by four individuals: Beth Wyman, Cody Robinson, Macaulay Knight, and Matthew Bridges. So whether you're an industry veteran or you're just starting into the sector, this part of the podcast is definitely worth listening to as we talk about the future of the sector and growth within our sectors here in the UK and in the US. Beth, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. How's your visit to the UK so far?
It's been really cool. Like, I've seen Oxford and then Birmingham.
Okay.
And then now here, and this place is really nice. We stayed in a castle like thing yesterday.
Wow, so it's nice. It's a full road tour.
Yeah. I wish we had time to see more, but a week is
okay.
A lot.
Well, you're looking remarkably fresh considering you've been traveling the country and, you know.
I appreciate that.
So, Beth, for the listeners, tell us a little bit about your role in the US and also what drew you to the Young Professionals for CIFESA.
So I've been in the industry about 10 years now. I work for a company called Authorized Commercial Equipment Service, and we're out of North and South Carolina.
Okay.
So I started off, and it was just like supposed to be like a temporary thing, but then, you know, 10 years later, here I am. Okay. And my role is I'm the warranty and third-party billing administrator for our company.
Mm-hmm.
I've done dispatching, I've done procurement, I've done a lot of things with our company. And what kind of drew me to CIFESA was, to the YPC in CIFESA was, I kept seeing like the younger people, like they would get together and it looked fun, but I didn't really know anybody. So I kind of like stayed back, and finally a couple of the girls in the YPC came up to me and they're like, you just have to join. You have to join and you can come to our meetings, talk to us on our monthlies. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then it's just been great. So much networking, getting to know people I would have never got to know if I didn't just give it a shot and try. So okay. It's been a fun experience.
Perfect. And as we get into the podcast, I'm going to ask you a few more questions about it, but we'll keep that for a bit. But thank you for that introduction. Mm-hmm. Macaulay, welcome also to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. How are you?
Have you travelled? I'm good, good. Have you travelled far? So
I'm based in Salford, Manchester. Right. Last night, I was invited to dinner by the guys from CIFESA,
okay,
which was in Sutton Coldfield. So just a half-hour drive this morning.
Right, okay. Not too bad. So again, just an introduction, what your role is in the sector, and yeah, then you're part of CEDA Academy as well.
Correct, yeah. So I've been in the industry for 10 years, just shy of 10 years. I work for Contiquip, who are a service and installation-based company in Salford, okay, Manchester.
Yeah, I know them.
And then we got the academy as well. Obviously, I was kind of thrown into the academy. I wasn't sort of introduced to it as Beth was with the YPC. My boss, Nick, at the time was like, look, Mac, here's the academy, you're in. It's like, mm-hmm, what's it about, you know? So I kind of found on my feet, coming to conferences and working out what it was. And yeah, so the academy, I'm a member of the academy. I'm also a part of the leadership team as well.
Okay.
So there's myself and nine others on there, and just, yeah, really enjoying it.
Well, thank you for that. And again, we'll come back and pick up more about Cedar Academy and things like that. So, Cody, also another welcome to the show from across the Atlantic. How's it been so far for you?
It has been more than I can take in. You know, okay. We got in, you know, 24 hours with no sleep, quick little nap. Woke up, went and tried to explore all of London. Made that mistake of trying to do that all in, you know, half a day.
Yeah, yeah, and it's massive.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't make it through a quarter of what we wanted to.
And, okay.
Was time
any
to grab
highlights
some.
You saw that?
Yeah, so we walked through Hyde Park, made nice. It to Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
We thought we would get to see the exchanging of the guard. There was like 3,000 people there at 11 o'clock in the morning. And so we bypassed that. Westminster Abbey, beautiful. You know, we went on Sunday, so there wasn't a lot of touring through a lot of these places. But just seeing the outside was just blows your mind on how all this was done so long ago. And, you know, just seeing the way things are constructed these days
with
the technology and how buildings are still standing, you know, hundreds of years later. Big Ben, House of Parliament. And then, you know, back to the train station to make it back in time for dinner.
Fantastic. Okay. So your role, what did you do in the US, and then how did you get into the Young Academy? Young professionals. I'm mixing two words there.
Oh, that's all right. We all know what you mean. So my role with my company is a lot of the day-to-day operations. So anything from coordinating with customers that are working to onboard with us, you know, working with our different regions to make sure they have the information they need to stay on top of everything and just, you know, trying to make sure that the ship sails smoothly.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Matt, welcome. All the way from Wales. You're still living in Wales?
Yes, or? Yes. I'd rarely leave unless I'm working over the water.
Okay. Why would you? So, yeah, welcome to the show. Tell us about your role, who you work for, and also your, you know, what you do within the academy.
I'm no longer a member of the academy.
Okay.
I've now hung up those boots, per se.
Right.
I'm now sat on the technical steering group for CEDA. Helping members with any technical queries, drafting up regs and guidance documents. My role within HP Catering, I'm now the projects and installation manager. I've been with the company, dare I say it, since I left school.
Mm-hmm.
Started off with them working in the summer holidays. An opportunity came up to do a traineeship because I was a little bit too old for an apprenticeship at the time. And from there, I've gone on to gain a lot of, let's call it, frontline experience on the tools. Still am on the tools as and when business needs require it. But yeah, I've been with them for over 20 years.
Perfect. Okay. So, I mean, just to kick us off, I've got a non-industry, well, it is an industry question, but a bit of an icebreaker, if you like. Beth, if you want to start us. If you could, like, instantly master or deliver a piece of food service equipment or technology, what would it be?
If I myself, like,
yeah, if you could just,
if
like,
I knew everything about
it.
So I've seen a demonstration one time a couple years ago about some new robotic stuff that they're coming out with for like chain restaurants.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be really cool to master something like that because it's new, it's incoming, and that way I'd be ahead of the curve.
Okay.
And yeah, because I think it's like for like fryers.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it like
yeah.
automatically dispenses them and refills them and does all kind of stuff. So
I was at an FM show in the US and they had like this full on robot kitchen and they're cooking and I was like, wow.
I think that'd be really cool because, I mean, eventually a lot of stuff. Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't happen. I don't want to be the tester for that.
Matt, would you? What would you?
For me, I'd say it's more induction technology because there's a big push for change from being an ACS gas qualified engineer. There's a big push at the moment from gas to electric within the industry. Being part of the service department as well, we see a lot of general waste when it comes to electronic components or parts just being binned and replaced. So to me, it'd be learning more about induction. I think it's a bit of a grey matter kind of subject.
Okay.
Bit of voodoo, as they say.
Yeah. And Mac, what
do you want? Yeah, I've already mastered mine, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, mine's at home. I think the Welsh call it a pop tipping. it's basically it's a microwave at home. You just pop it in, set the timer. No, I love that. If it's a serious answer, I'm probably going to go a little bit safe with this one, but maybe, you know, the combination ovens, just, again, they do it all.
Yeah.
All right, they don't fry the equipment, but you can still have bacon and egg made in a combi oven. So just mastering one of them does it all nice and easy.
Cool. I like the microwave. That's a good
answer. A pop tipping, yeah. It's quicker as well. It might be cold in the middle, but the rest is good enough.
I heard something interesting yesterday talking to a group, and it seems like they're working on models with hydrogen. So
that's Falcon do that as well. Falcon,
I think it would be interesting to be on the front lines of something like that, you know, to see where that's going to lead the industry in the next couple of years, you know, if it comes through.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's still a lot of unknowns in the productions of how it all works, but you know, could be the next big thing.
Cool. Okay, so I'll just throw this question out to the group. So what can Cedar and CFESA, if that's how I'm saying it right, what can they learn from each other in developing new young talent?
The biggest thing is just how to reach them. You
right.
know, how do you reach the younger generation and groups of people right now? You know, and I think everybody's doing their best, you know, trying to leverage social media.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is how do we get in front of everybody to show them how it's been beneficial to all of us?
I think it's retaining as well, isn't it? Yeah. It's retaining good staff within the industry. I think YPC and the Academy is a great tool to retain young staff and showcase what the industry is about, because it can become quite daunting sometimes, I think. We've touched on it before. Matt, you've got one of your new lads here this year, first time, and you can see he seems a little bit sheepish. But mm-hmm. I think opening the industry up, and again, look, if you know the guys from the YPC come to the Academy and come to the CEDAR conference and they can take something and throw an idea back to the CFESA conference, then it's a positive all around, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's a big ask to it, is how well known is the industry? I mean, I know at the moment there's a big shortage of time-served engineers and actually apprentices coming up through the ranks. But like I say, you leave school thinking, oh, you can become a plumber, electrician,
yeah.
an architect. But there's nothing to say, oh, become a class one catering engineer.
Yeah.
No real mm-hmm. awareness of the trade.
I think the really good niche as well is sort of within our sector or our industry, the actual technician or the engineer. It's, you know, I used to hear it in school all the time. You know, your mates would want to do plumbing, or they want to be an electrician,
yeah.
or they want to be a gas engineer.
Yeah.
Well, within this trade, you can actually be all three as well.
Well, you are, yeah. yeah. As a class, so, well, you've got refrigeration in that as well.
Correct,
so.
Yeah. And an element of HVAC as well. I know HVAC's massive in the States.
Yes.
But
yes.
It's just showcasing that niche and those sort of like dark pockets of this industry, and trying to, social media is another massive example of it as well.
It is. And I've seen like a big push from all over, just not just this industry, but a lot of blue collar industries that are trying to push it, because I mean, for a long time it was just college being pushed. So I right. think like with everybody working together to show like you don't have to go to college to do these things, because like in America you don't have to go to like a training school mm-hmm. to get to work in our industry. Like we, most companies kind of train on the job, and then they will send you to classes. Like once we see that you're going to work out, we'll send you to classes at like CFESA to get master certified in different yeah. things. So I think there's a lot of people in the U.S. and apparently here too that are like pushing the trades more.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's awesome.
I think the food service equipment trade is becoming more visible. I mean, I don't know if you think, but I mean, like 5-10 years ago, people were like, what? But maybe now with things, you know.
Yeah, I had a constant.
You guys yeah, are doing,
I, yeah, I used to have a constant problem all the time when people would ask, like, what do you do? And I tell them that I fit kitchens. You just instantly think, all right, so you install kitchens at home, you do yeah, counters, yeah. you know, counters yeah. and worktops. And yeah.
What did I have the other day? Oh, you're a chippy.
Yeah.
I was like, just offended me.
Yeah, don't insult me.
So I saw on the, I think it was on LinkedIn, there was that competition between Cedar and CFESA, that the engineers competition.
Yeah, the UK and US engineer yeah. one, yeah.
Do you think is there more exchange programs or those kind of things lined up, and how are you benefiting from them?
I mean, I think the biggest benefit is just showing, you know, we're all going through the same things, but it just gives us more content to show how things are going, and you know, the opportunities that are out there. And I think there's countless possibilities for collaboration between us. You know, all of us is still pretty new to working together like this. And,
yeah,
you know, us young people, we like to think that we can come up with a lot of interesting things. So it'll be interesting to see what we can continue to come up with.
Mm. I think what we're doing already is great. Like the fact that we're able to come here and speak with everybody and meet people. And then I know that Olivia with the YPC has a lot to do with speaking with people.
Okay.
And CETA. And I think there's plenty of opportunity. There's conferences for us to like travel between and get more knowledge from each other.
Yeah.
Because the countries are a little bit different, but everybody still needs the technicians. Everybody's still trying to grow the industry. So there's plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, the partnership's still new. And I think you've touched on it there as well, Radford, with the UK and US engineers video. There's also a episodic series as well that Olivia and Justin has put together.
Right.
Sort of showcasing the industry in the UK. And there's a vlog series where Olivia and Justin have been out to Grat Brothers to sort of see the inside of a working office, speaking to engineers, logging calls. And then there was the Linda Lewis piece of challenge as well. So it's small content. Okay. And I think there's also room as well for maybe at some point further down the line, maybe technicians from the US coming over here and spending a day with the UK engineers and just comparing and maybe learning a thing or two.
Or vice versa.
Shots fired. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Matt, for you, what?
It's my first time meeting the Cefesa crew.
Oh, okay.
Like I say,
Are you hoping for a trip out to the US?
Well, I mean, if the opportunity's there, we'll see. But it's just great to meet the wider team, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so
came on board. Was it last year, predominantly?
Right.
So like I said,
it's pretty new.
Yeah, pretty new to me.
So what? Whether this is together or individually, it doesn't really matter. But what training opportunities have helped so far? And then what? What's missing? I don't want to be negative there, but is there something that's missing and what can be done?
Missing how?
Any training opportunities, any development opportunities? I don't know. Is there something extra that can be done or do you think?
I think a lot of that revolves around us.
Right, okay.
And how hungry we want to be towards it. You know, if we just sit back on our hands and don't try to get after it, you know, there's nothing else is going to come up, you know. We have to take the initiative ourselves to stay connected, to, you know, try to learn and grow with our leadership and then, you know, pass that information between each other, good, bad, and indifferent. You know, one thing that I've noticed through the tours that we've had is we're all the same. And so it's, you know, we can all help each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to do about development or whatnot or self-development. You've got to want to do that yourself. And I mean, I know within CETA, especially within the last 18 months, 2 years, there's been a lot of push for manufacturer training, just bringing those on the front line up to speed with the new technologies because that's moving like a train. So yeah, you've got to want to move on with the times, really.
Yeah,
I think that the trainings we have right now, as far as technicians go, I think they're great. Okay. There's not a lot missing on that front. I do wish that the only thing I kind of wish there was more of is maybe like the office staff training, because there's a lot that goes into the back end of this industry.
I think you're
doing
a lot of training within your organization from what I've heard from the
president. Yeah, we have there's all kinds of gas, steam, electric, refrigeration, and then, you know, higher levels. There's the beginning tech ones.
Okay.
There's plenty of the technician ones, but like, and there's like a managerial one as well.
Right.
But just one that's like basic office stuff, like for our industry, because when you come in and you don't know anything, it can be, there's a lot to do and it can be kind of frustrating for people who are just coming in something like that. And I don't know what kind of class that would make that up. Yeah. But I feel like there needs to be something that way it can be like transferred over.
You look as far as what parts sound doing, you know, they've got a great sort of hub in the central of the UK. They put on lots of manufacturers training and industry relevant training courses, whether it be gas, water or electrics. I can't think of anything that's missing. I'll probably be doing somebody a disservice if it is missing, because it's probably in development. Someone's probably working on it.
Okay.
But I think this is what makes, you know, the Academy and YPC so special. It's that it puts people all in the same place who can openly talk about stuff that might be missing or could be improved or could be developed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it works that way.
Mac, and you picked up on this before, but I'm going to ask this question for everybody. Is there like a one misconception around working in the food service equipment sector that people out of our sector might think? Can you think of one or not think of one?
I feel like I've heard a lot, and this is not always the case, but I feel like I've heard a lot that people think it's an extremely like dirty job. Right, and sometimes it can be. I mean, I do have technicians that will come in and be like covered in grease from working on the floor of on a fryer. But there's some days where, you know, it's an easier day. They're just going in, installing parts. They're not having to get completely filthy. A lot of our technicians don't ever have to work outside, so it's not super hot work. I mean, unless you do cold side, and then, you got to get on roofs sometimes. So, and it does get very hot in the States. But yeah, I just don't feel like it's not like a car mechanic who's always covered in grease or it's just not as dirty as some of the other jobs. So. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The kitchens in the States must be a lot cleaner than what they
are. They just have to get on the floor. Depends on where you're working.
Anybody else got any misconceptions they've come across? I mean, you said about people think you work in the domestic market, but...
Yeah, it's quick. And I understand it as well. You know, you tell someone that you fit kitchen, you install kitchens, they just instantly think of the home domestic kitchen. Yeah. But I think as well, at the same time, there's like a myth or a misconception that's going around that when you do talk about sort of high-end commercial kitchens, people again just instantly think of just chefs. We need to maybe take the spotlight off chefs a little bit and put a spotlight on the design of a kitchen. And if we can get the industry to a point where people see kitchens, you actually look past the chefs and compliment the design and the install and the workmanship of a kitchen and how it goes in and how it's installed.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time, too, people, you ask someone about a commercial kitchen, they think it's just a room in the back of the building. But as you were saying about the design element of it now, it's now becoming more of a focal point within the more modern restaurants anyway, where, like you say, the customer is physically seeing what
it's a lot more open
the chefs
now,
are doing, what equipment is in the kitchen, like, ooh, what's that bit of kit, or what's that rotisserie doing there? So I'm seeing a lot more of that, where the kitchen is becoming more of a focal point, more of a feature than anything.
So how do we attract more kind of young people into the sector? Is any, I mean, I know you guys have got to kind of doing it already, I suppose, but is there any other sort of ideas or initiatives you're working on can share?
There's an easy answer. I think social media is probably the biggest answer.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people have their own career, they have these career paths solely online, and a lot of people's personal lives are orientated around social media. So, you know, again, it's a great tool. If you can flower up this industry online, I think it will just gain so much traction.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a big one too is like you say, attracting those individuals, but also keeping them, keeping them interested, keeping them within the industry. Like I say, I know it can, like certain elements of the job can get a bit mundane, but I mean, like I say, we spoke about development. You've got to want to look to change really and move with the times.
Okay. Showing the sustainability of the industry. I mean, we all saw that, you know, even through COVID, you know, people were still going out to eat, buying food from restaurants. You know, it's, you know, I'm not going to say it's completely recession proof, but I mean, it's going to be around. And so there's always going to be a need for the engineers, which means there's always going to be a need for the people in the office.
Yeah.
You know, so showing people that it's not just something that you get in and you're there for a couple of years to get you by. Like, you can make a life and a career out of this.
True. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's very much, it's always going to be around. People are always going to want to take out food. And as long as there's takeout, even if the stuff gets developed more and it is like what I was saying earlier about robotics or things get more high tech, people still have to work on that stuff. People still have to run that stuff. And nothing's ever going to be completely robotic, I don't believe, because stuff goes wrong.
Yeah.
So I think there'll always be a need for this industry. And I think I agree with the social media as well, though, because that's how all the young people have all the different social medias. I mean, I'm in my 30s, so I only use like maybe Instagram and LinkedIn now at this point.
Right.
And I think the younger generation, like if we spread the word on, I don't even know what all the younger ones use. What was it? TikTok. Yeah, TikTok. Oh, man, that made me sound real old. I have heard of TikTok.
I think you call it doom scrolling now, where you just spend forever scrolling, just watching videos. So, yeah.
Just scroll your life.
There's so many eyes online on social media, so it's a great gateway to the industry and attracting new people.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Content on TikTok, yeah.
Yeah. Matt, you've transitioned from sort of academy into leadership, industry leadership. How can we support more people doing that? I mean, or are you already?
I wouldn't say we are supporting that at this moment in time. I mean, it's just one of them things. You kind of, like I say, talking from personal experience, I fell into the industry just through, like I say, my father being a refrigeration engineer. He knew my current MD, there was a position, there was a job. So it's just natural transition, I think, natural progress through the ranks.
Yeah.
I mean, could we support it? Potentially for those, I'd say, who are coming maybe to the end of the academy days, there's possibly an opportunity there to say, to do some sort of mentoring or buddy system to transition from, say, the youth element of it into the more, I say adults, we're all adults, but you know what I mean, into the more senior roles within the industry. I guess it's down
to individuals as well, if they want to.
Exactly. Someone might come to a point within their career that they think, oh, I fancy a change. And like I said, we've noticed a lot of that happening since COVID days, where people start to value maybe their lives a bit more or their free time a bit more. I've certainly noticed that within our small company. Like I say, people do value their free time a lot more. But like I say, I thought there's opportunity there to support those who want to make a career out of the industry, help them through that transition, because it can be daunting. Like I say, I remember coming to my first CEDA conference back in 2017. Don't ask me how old I was then, but it was a good few years back. But like I say, just to see that development from being the young lad was in essence just doing the installs for the company to then progress from winning the technical rising star, being asked to join the academy, spending a few years in the academy, and now, like I say, being invited onto the technical steering group just because I've got that font of knowledge and experience from being on the tools on the front line. So yeah, I'd agree to say that there's definitely room for something to be put in place to help people transition from one role into another.
But obviously you're kind of proof that it does work.
Yeah,
you're here living and breathing it. So that's a good story.
Yeah.
Macaulay, you're well through your career, and what's next for you, and what kind of support might you want, if you don't mind me asking, from your employer or CEDA Academy? Or
see, the support I get already is actually very good. You know, they value trust. You know, they trust you to go out and go to these conferences and academies and network as such, and you know, collaborate and communicate with other people within the academy and within CEDA. But you know, you look at Matt, and Matt's touched on it quite well there. You know, the gateway of what's next within CEDA. You know, coming out of the academy, I'm 28. I think it's 35 and under for people within the academy. So, you know, what's next when you come out of the academy? Maybe it's something on the TSG. I think it's working groups within CEDA as well that we're trying to tackle difficult areas within our industry and trying to improve them. So these small pathways there of you know, other work to do once you leave the academy. But then in terms of the business itself and sort of my professional career going forward, I was fortunate enough to work for a small family business doing installations, where they kind of taught me that second guessing things is a positive thing. So again, it's just developing that legacy that's been installed from this small family business and just driving and trying to promote the best service and install company we can.
Cool. Okay. Beth, Cody, what's the view over the pond, if you like, about leadership and you know, getting people into leadership roles?
So I feel like everybody wants to be in a higher position than they are. Everybody wants the more pay. Everybody wants. It's just about finding the people who actually want to work for it. And it's been kind of difficult with the younger ones. Like, they are very much, they want instant gratification. They want to come in and they want to be the boss. And that's not really the way it works, because you have to have knowledge in this industry to be able to understand what's going on with your technicians, with your customers. So I definitely think there's they want it to happen. The younger ones want it to happen. They just have to have a little more patience and okay. be able to get there.
Yeah, and just kind of piggybacking off of what Beth said, you know, having those right, the right leadership above you to have that trust, like Macaulay was talking about, but also, you know, want to grow you, when they finally see, you know, the ability and the potential that you have, you know, taking and nurturing that obviously it's to help the company, which is great. But then, you know, we as young professionals can also turn that around and pass that on to the younger professionals that are coming up. So, you know, it also becomes our duty to pass it along also, especially mm-hmm. if we want to continue to grow everything. So, you know, it's just,
yeah,
you know, it's up to us, you know, as much as we don't realize it right now, in 10 years from now, you know, most of us could potentially really be leaders inside of all of our companies, you know, that are making the decisions of who to send to conferences like this. So,
okay, so we come to the kind of final stage of the podcast. What's your views on CEDA and CFES? What it's going to look like, say, in 2030? What are your aspirations? What you're hoping it will look like, maybe even?
I know that CFES is driving an initiative to have 33,000 technicians trained by 2033.
Right. Okay.
So hopefully, yeah. So hopefully,
no pressure. They said, yeah.
No pressure.
Cedar got lined up.
But, you know, it's
need to try and grow the island.
It's, yeah. It's a goal to work towards. So yeah. You know, don't ask me where we stand currently, but you know, I know that you know we're using CFESA to send technicians to for training, be it the new tech training, the electrical, steam, and gas. You know, it's great resources. Every technician that's gone has just talked about how much they've learned. And so it's great to know that, you know, the people that we're giving the opportunity are learning from it, right? It's not just they're going out, they're, you know, hanging out for a week. They're coming back with knowledge and they're able to use it. But, you know, kind of like I said earlier, what this looks like in 10 years really is down to us. You know, we've got the opportunity to, you know, move from the YPC to other committees inside CFESA, but then you know, we also have the opportunity to run for board seats, you know, all the way up to vice president and president. So, yeah.
Anyone else's hopes for?
Well, from my perspective, I think we've seen a lot more. I don't know if it's the same field, a lot more American equipment mm-hmm. coming into the country and being installed. So I think it's important to keep that relationship. It's something that can be developed with, obviously, as your technicians are being trained up. That knowledge could be passed on to us to pass on to our technicians because yeah. inevitably it's them that are working on kit that's come from another country. And like I say, we might do something slightly different to the way you guys do something, but it's just having that relationship to on and links, really, to say, oh, hang on, I've got an engineer with a question, I'm not too sure. Just pick up a phone or send a quick email over to the guys in the States and we'll get a quick turnaround time on the problem that's in front of us. So I think within that the time frame there is just to build on the relationship that started and develop it, let it flourish, I say.
Yeah. Beth, any?
I would really like to see, so I know we're working on it, but more communication between like high schools and colleges with our industry. Because mm-hmm. I know that like we're kind of like they have the classes like electric and stuff like that, but just something that focuses more. And I know it's something that we're all working towards, but I'd like to see it actually happen. Like if someone wants to go to school just for commercial kitchen repair, then it's there. They can do it. Because, I mean, they have welding. They have electrical. They have those classes. So I think it's very doable. You just have to get it in there and get it done.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Cody and Matt's touched on it already. I think people within the industry has got a lot of responsibility. It's not just, you know, your managers and your directors that need to drive the industry forward. I think it's everybody involved that needs to try and push and protect the industry.
Okay.
And the academy and the YPC is a great tool to do that. So again, if it's just keep that collaboration going and maybe, you know, in the next 5 years, there might be joint conferences or there might be, you know, an academy young persons conference just solely based on promoting the academy through younger people.
Okay. Just to mix it up slightly, personal question, if you like. All of you kind of traveling, I think, or traveling around for work. Is there, when you're in a hotel or you're traveling, is there, or if you're in the UK eating our food, any sort of guilty pleasures with regard to food that you might go to? Be that, I don't know, Krispy Kreme donuts or Greggs in my case.
I think I'm bored with you with the Greggs. I mean, when you need something early in the morning, I mean, Greggs is open. It's set up. You've got your bacon and sausage pap and your coffee. You're ready to go, set, kick off for the day.
Exactly.
So I'm with you on the Greggs.
I like to get adventurous.
Okay.
You know, I don't, when I go somewhere, even if it's, you know, 2 hours away from my house, I don't want to eat the same stuff that I can eat when I'm at home.
Okay.
You know, so I like to try
all different things.
Yeah, anything I can't have.
That's good.
I'm the opposite. I'm a picky eater. So there's a lot of things I'm just not going to touch. But I think, like, the one thing that I'm always going to look for, no matter where I go, is, like, I'm not really a coffee drinker either. So okay. I want my Coca-Cola in the morning.
Right, that's okay. That's your go-to.
That's my caffeine for the day.
And you haven't had that this week.
I have not had a real Coca-Cola, I don't feel like.
They taste different.
Do they?
Yeah, they do.
It's a different sugar rate that they use. Yeah.
There's a lot of additional processed ingredients that go into
it. Oh, yeah. I'm sure the ones in America are terrible. Yeah. But what, they taste really good.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. The ones here taste different.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot more food regulation in the UK than there in the US, which is not a bad thing.
Mm.
If you ask my wife, she's all for it. You know, there's like no food dyes in majority of the food in the UK, and I mean, there's tons of dyes and all kind of processed sugars. So,
yeah. So has this week been like a bit of a detox kind of?
I mean, it's still got the caffeine. I'm just like, it just doesn't taste quite as good.
Quite
but
the same.
By the time I get back, I'm probably gonna be like, oh, this is too sweet when I get a regular one.
Yeah, I remember when I went to New York, when I went to the States, and I went to a pizza shop just next to the hotel, and it had like a sticker in the window, and it was like, scored between 1, 2, and 3, and it was scored 2. So I enjoyed the pizza, but then we went on the open top like tour bus the next day, and the tour guide was like, "Oh, just to let you know, if you look in the window of any food shop, you'll see a scoring system from 1, 2, and 3. 1 being do not eat there, 2 being the kitchen's really dirty, and 3 being okay." And I remember turning to my partner and
Seriously?
Saying, "Yeah, I remember turning to my partner and saying that pizza shop we went to last night was scored 2."
But a lot of places like that, the dirtier the kitchen, the better the food.
The better the food. I say this all the time. It's like when we go to like burger vans, you know, off the side of like carriageway, and it's like the dirtier the griddle, the better tasting the food is. And it's just like
the more
extra flavor
stuck to the griddle.
Absolutely. But you know, I'm the same as Matt. To be honest, you do that many travel. You know, you're traveling all the time. You do that many miles on the road. The amount of services you pass, it's just dead easy just to pop in and grab a Greggs or grab a KFC. It's not a guilty pleasure. It's just habit.
It's like a bakery.
It's an institution in the UK. To be honest,
and like I said, once they introduced their bacon and sausage rolls or baguettes, so
your bacon is different.
Yes, the bacon here is different.
Your bacon is
correct.
Your bacon is a streaky bacon.
Yeah, y'all's bacon is like ham.
Bacon rashes. Ours is still a pig.
There's like a piece of the bacon here that is similar. There's that one little piece on the end of the bacon that gets
thin. Yeah.
That's the same piece that we have.
That's the bad bit. We call that the bad bit.
Yeah.
Jeez, what's wrong with you?
Hang on. So just to wrap it up, from each of you, one piece of advice to anyone coming into our industry or thinking about coming into our industry, Matt.
Yeah, I think just soak in. Just soak in. Okay. Speak to everybody. There's so many different job roles within our industry, so you can constantly learn and take from others and apply it to whatever your specific role is or whatever your task is. Just come in, be open-minded, speak to people, ask questions, and just speak. Just speak and don't be afraid to put points across as well, because sometimes the best ideas actually come from the quietest people in the room or maybe the younger people in the room. So just keep an open mind and open ears.
Fantastic. Okay.
For me, like I say, it's talking from experience. It's a daunting industry. Can be cutthroat at times, but it is a roller coaster. You're going to have highs, you're going to have lows, but in essence, you've just got to enjoy it. And as Mac has said, you've got to absorb it all, not be scared to speak up and speak your mind.
Yeah.
And like I say, if you can basically tick all them boxes, then you'll go far, I reckon.
True. Fair comment.
I think both you gentlemen hit the nail on the head. Piece of advice that I got when I started into this industry was just be new. you know, come in, listen, learn. You know, then you start speaking up after you know a little bit more. And then you'll learn that, you know, the high parts of that roller coaster are way worth all the downs and the fast.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree with everybody said, just stick with it. Me not being in the actual technical side of it, not in the office side. If you have questions, ask somebody. My technicians have, just for me asking questions, have taught me so much that I would have never, ever known if I wouldn't have asked. Like, if you really want to make it, just learn the stuff.
Yeah.
And technicians are usually pretty open about telling you whatever you want to know or explaining things to you that you wouldn't usually understand. So
that's very true.
Yeah.
They don't
in detail.
I'm sure. Well, thank you. I mean, I think the Cedar CFESA relationship or new love affair, if you like, it's great. I think it's a really positive thing, and you guys are testament to that. So thanks for coming on the show. I hope you've all kind of enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you.
Enough. Enjoy the rest of the Cedar Conference, and no doubt I'll see you about. So thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks.
Well, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. On the next episode, I'm over in Berlin. I'm sitting down with three leading food service consultants who are all members of the FCSI, Food Service Consultant Society International. If you've got any questions, please email me on radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk or any subjects you want me to cover. And if you get a moment, please subscribe and like the podcast. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is exclusively sponsored by Ali Group and is a Sound Rebel production.